Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. As we embark on this new year, many of us use this time of transition and renewal to refocus intention on who we want to be and how to shape our lives. Today on Pathways, we will be talking about a new tool designed to help you remember aspects of your true nature as a being of light, and to access your cosmic mission and raise your vibratory frequency, drawing you into a higher, wider, and deeper dimension of consciousness. Our guest today is Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, PhD, author and creator of the new Oracle card deck, the Empath Activation Cards. Stephanie is an award-winning author of the international bestseller, The Evolutionary Empath. Her passion is to help fellow sensitive souls break out of energetic jail and fully embrace their soul's evolution as co-creators of new earth consciousness. A shamanic minister and prolific creator of spiritual tools, Stephanie founded Blue Star Temple, an online resource for spiritual seekers to learn energetic skills, hone empathic abilities, access spiritual knowledge, and connect with cosmic consciousness. Stephanie holds a bachelor's degree in mathematics and a master's and doctorate in shamanic studies. She is described as a divine feminine change agent and a champion of empaths. Well, hello, Stephanie. As an empath myself, I'm happy to welcome you to the Pathways program.
Thanks so much, Paul.
I think your history is fascinating. I mean, you've gone from being an Air Force officer to being a shamanic spiritual teacher and healer. How did you get there from here?
I was drug kicking and screaming for a few years because that's, you know, how that usually goes during your spiritual awakening, where you have one idea about where you think your life is going and spirit has another. So I, you know, it was never my intention to stay in the military for 20 years. It was just do it as long as it makes sense. And so I started getting this sort of call, this quiet calling in my heart that it was time to get out. And it wasn't like, hey, I know what I'm going to do next. It's time to get out. It was, I think it's time to get out. Ah, now what am I going to do? And my spiritual advisor, or excuse me, my financial advisor, funny little slip, my financial advisor, with the company that I'd been with for 10 years, said, well, Steph, you're really good with people. Have you thought about being a financial advisor? And so I kind of liken it to like the first person of the opposite sex or whatever your persuasion is in grade school that likes you. The first time somebody likes you, you're like, oh, okay, you like me, I'll like you back. And so like, oh, you want me to do that? Okay, I'll do that. So, you know, no passion, no heart, just, oh, okay, that's what you think, I'll be good at it, so I'll do that. And started my own financial planning business, and I quit in less than 6 months because I hated it. And I lost about $25,000 because I didn't stay in long enough to recoup what I had invested. And that is what threw me full force into my spiritual awakening, which is a period of about 5 years that I've described as living 100 years in that 5 year period, just being in the spiritual crucible, just getting cooked down and cooked down and completely transformed into a new substance. And so, yeah, go ahead.
Some people call that the dark night of the soul.
And it yeah,
it's a lot longer than one night.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Night in quotes for sure. Yeah. Because it was my initial awakening, if you will, my first deep, intense, transformative sort of death and rebirth process. And I had no tools, and I had no reference point, and I had no skills for getting through it. And I have a very strong will. And so that's what I was referring to with the kicking and screaming, is it was sort of like dragging me with my heels dragging across the floor until I finally learned how to surrender and embrace what was happening. And so when I came out of the other side of the spiritual crucible, I realized that I had some nuggets of wisdom. I had a language for what I was experiencing, the ability to make esoteric concepts kind of accessible. I have the ability to speak left brain and right brain. And I just felt compelled to help other people going through the same thing. It's like, if I can make their time in the crucible shorter, easier, less painful, then that's what I was compelled to do. And so that's when I started my business 15 years ago.
Now, did this transition, this five-year period, did this wreak havoc on your relationships?
It wreaked havoc on everything. Pretty much nothing looked the same entering and exiting. My marriage came apart. I moved, you know, different location, different house, different car, different everything.
Okay, so one of your new identities was to become a shaman. And I didn't even know there was such a thing as a doctorate in shamanic studies. But tell us about your identity as a shaman. And basically, for the audience's sake, what is a shaman?
Right. Wide interpretation of what that means. But basically, if you look back historically at the, you know, indigenous cultures, native cultures, the shaman or the medicine man or medicine woman, these were the people who, on behalf of the tribe, played several roles. They were the healers, often using herbs, whatever was around where they lived, engaging with the unseen realms. They were masters at entering into alternate states of consciousness to retrieve information, to either go into the quote underworld, if you will, or the inner world, to travel in the dimensions with the spirit guides and the ancestors. So they were there to help their community with health on a spiritual, emotional, you know, physical level. They were also the seers, the ones that usually oversaw certain transitional rites of passage or ceremony or ritual or received visions for the tribe. So, you know, a lot of different roles that they played. I have a couple of different shamanic teachers. I study and practice in a Peruvian tradition of shamanism called the Pachacuti Mesa tradition. And so it's...
Does that involve plant medicine?
It does. It can. It's not there. What I love about this tradition is there is no, it is not a rigid, you have to do this and you have to give up that. And you have, you know, it's like whatever spirituality, whatever belief system you already have, whatever your own history is, you are invited to just blend it with this tradition in a way that serves you. So I have engaged with plant medicine, but not a lot.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about, I find the title of your award-winning book, The Evolutionary Empath, quite interesting. I haven't read that book. I would like to, and I will, but there's the book. It looks a lot like The Deck, right?
It does. My publisher did that on purpose, that where they, you know, a similar color theme and font.
Okay, mm-hmm. So what does it mean to be an evolutionary empath? I mean, is it possible be any other kind of empath? I mean, could you be a regressive empath? I mean, what is the sense of it?
Right. What is that word about? My belief is yes, you know, and one of the unique things I bring to the empath discussion is the belief that we are here with a cosmic purpose of helping humanity ascend to the next level of consciousness. And if you look historically back, there are over 30 ancient cultures that mark a grand cycle of time, commonly referred to as the Great Year, that basically explains the rise and fall and rise again of human civilization and consciousness. So if you're familiar with the Iron Age, Bronze Age, Silver Age, Golden Age, and we're not talking about the age that man discovered those metals, we're talking about, you know, levels of consciousness, that's what I'm talking about, what I'm referring to. And so as a collective in human consciousness, we are out of the Iron Age into the Bronze Age. We are in the ascending phase once again. And so I believe that empaths are here on purpose, that, you know, even 50 years ago, there weren't very many of us. 100 years ago, they were very rare. But we're in the middle of an empathic big bang because we show up on the planet with a slightly different energetic physiology, heightened sensitivities, a progressive value system, and just a different level of consciousness, so that I believe, you know, it's on purpose, because there's so many of us that feel out of place, that feel like we were born at the wrong time, that we're misunderstood, crying out, why am I here? Why am I so sensitive? And there's a quote from the movie Moneyball that says, the first guy through the wall always gets bloody. And so for those of us that are here right now, we are the first ones through the wall. So we are here to help pave the way for the ones coming behind us.
It seems like there's something of a war on empathy these days, Donald Trump being probably the head cheerleader for that. But it seems like there's this great polarization happening. There's the empathic, evolutionary empaths on the one side, and there's the, regressive dinosaurs on the other side that just want money and cheap gasoline. Does it seem that way to you? Do you think there's some kind of disrespect for empathic people in the air?
Well, there's a lot I could say about that, so I'll try to keep it short. The first thing I would say is, for most of us in the world, we have historically a patriarchal culture. And so if you think about the masculine and feminine qualities and associate their association with the left and right brain. So left brain is the masculine, right brain is the feminine. Masculine / left brain principles have been valued in our society, right? So being very linear, practical, direct, the masculine principle is action oriented. It's about competition and accumulating and accomplishing. And so the feminine or the right brain qualities are more the intuitive, the creative, the compassionate, the non-linear, the more artistic. The feminine principle is the receiving principle. And so by default, because the masculine and left brain has been valued and prioritized, the feminine and the right brain have been deprioritized. And so as empaths, we pretty much peg the right brain / feminine spectrum, if you will. So part of what we're here to do, another way of saying that we're here to help humanity ascend to the next level of consciousness, is we're also here to help anchor and rebalance the divine feminine energies with the divine masculine. It's not about vilifying the masculine. It's about bringing them into balance and into conscious equal partnership together.
Now, what is the sense of the word activation? Okay, so there's this empathic surge, or there are empaths that are coming into the world. There's a lot of us. Why is there need for what is the sense of activation?
Yes. My belief is that we are cosmic beings, that we descend from the stars. Our heritage is more than just human. It's more than just planet Earth. As we're ascending in consciousness, dormant DNA strands are getting turned on, things are getting, light codes are being activated in our bodies. We are almost literally a switch is being flipped that's turning us on, causing us to remember who we are, to remember our magic, to remember our benevolence and right relationship to power and our relationship to everything in the cosmos. And so the word activation and empath activation cards is really about, consciously engaging the mystery, consciously engaging the universe, saying, I am here. I am ready as an emissary of light to be activated. Take me to the next level. I'm here. I'm ready. What is next for me?
Okay. All right. And do you think, just to step back for a second, do you think that all people are equally endowed with empathic potential?
My belief is that we're all born with that blueprint. And there's several things that affect how that expresses in our life. So obviously there's our soul choice, right, at a soul level to incarnate as an empath. But there's how we're raised in our family, the values of our family, what we're taught, the influence of our culture, society, teachers, church, how we internalize everything that's happened. And so right now, the general unfolding, if you will, for a lot of empaths is they're born an empath and they're not accepted, they're ridiculed, they're misunderstood. So they take those qualities, hide them deep inside, put on a mask to conform and be successful. And then at some point, 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, they have a crisis where they can no longer tolerate the dissonance between their authentic self and the self that they're presenting to the world.
All right, so let's talk about empath activation cards, the 44 card deck and guidebook, which you've just recently come out with. I'm very familiar with divination systems, and I know that this can be used as a divination system, but I also understand that it's got an initiatory aspect to it. And I want to just kind of cover both of those. But how did you come up with the archetypes, the set of archetypes with 44 cards? In Tarot, we have 78 cards. The I Ching's got 64 hexagrams. Your deck's got 44 cards. And they're beautiful, by the way. I love playing with it. I like the art. Did you do the art too?
I did. I'm also the artist.
I know. That's just so amazing. And I think it's brilliant the way that you characterize these archetypes in a visual form. But how did you come up with these archetypes? And would you say it's a balanced set of archetypes? Are there dark, shadowy ones? You know, like you have in Tarot, you've got the Hanged Man and the Devil and, all various kinds of difficult archetypes. Same thing in the I Ching. You've got some tough ones. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tough ones in here?
No, because my approach is the tough part is our lives, right? And so my intention with these cards was to create positive messages. Now they might be direct messages, like some of them may say, hey, you need to do this, or you should look at that because something is out of balance for you. But it's, I don't consider them to be dark in kind of the traditional sense.
Okay.
The number 44, honestly, so, excuse me, some of it was just a practical matter of how much time I had to complete the work before sending it to my publisher, so I kept tuning into my spirit guides, because I know I work with a lot of oracle cards. I have probably at least 25 or 30 decks. And 44 was always the lowest amount that I'd seen. I think 78 was the highest. And so I'm like, well, let me start with 44, because also painting all of the art, yeah, along with writing all of the messages was a, very intense process. And I kept checking with my guides and they're like, no, it's 44. It's 44. And the way I came up with the archetypes of the titles, honestly, I had a list. I would just get inspiration. Oh, we got to talk about this. Oh my gosh, this wants to come through. This wants to come through. And then as I started the work, they just sorted themselves out. And some of them would combine together and others would say, no, I'm not relevant anymore. Or I would, it was amazing where the inspiration come from. I'd watch an episode of Ancient Aliens and something would come up and I'm like, ah, that needs to be a card. And so it was this magical process with spirit, and the 44 cards emerged.
But it's not just 44 cards, it's four initiatory paths.
Yes.
It's another dimension that you normally don't see in a card deck. And so tell us about these four paths and how they fit together and how they could be used. Self-guided initiation into the mysteries of higher consciousness.
Yeah, I knew when I sat down to source this project, if you will, that I wanted there to be an overlay. I wanted there to be something additional to it. Not, so you can absolutely use this deck like any traditional oracle deck that you've ever worked with. And there in the beginning, there are some layouts that are offered. And I didn't really know what that was. I mean, this is just an insight into my creative process is I don't know everything that's going to happen at the beginning. When I sit down day one and start to create, I don't know half of what's going to come through. A lot of it happens in the process of just doing it. And so as I got about 75 to 80% through with the images and the artwork, I realized that they wanted to organize themselves into four groups of 11. And what was amazing is when I took all of the original art is on 8x10 canvas. And so I took all these 8x10s and spread them out on my bed so I could see them all at once. And they just told me, they're like, these go together, these go together, these go together. And then I was just downloaded, if you will, that this is meant to be, this can be kind of a self-guided launch sequence in a way, just like you said, where it's designed to function as a self-guided initiation into the mysteries of higher consciousness. And so they, as you progress, you know, so you could actually read the book from front to back. And as you progress, you can feel that the energy, the frequency rises, you know, the vibratory rate is higher and more refined, and the perspective gets bigger and grander. And so I just want to quickly read the names of the four initiatory paths so you can get a feel for it. So initiatory path one, just lost the page. The initiatory path one is healing, wholing, and practices for embodiment. So it's, you know, starting out in the 3D, you know, rubber meets the road, human existence kind of level with the physical existence. Initiatory path two is light body expansion and tools of mastery over your perception and experience. Initiatory path three is activating higher consciousness, the astral plane, and tools of multidimensionality. And then the fourth and final path is cosmic mission, star relatives, and your power as co-creator with divinity. And so you can tell just by listening to the description and feeling the energy of those that there is this progression.
Okay. Okay, cool. And can people just tune into one of these distinct initiatory paths, or should they do it as a sequence?
I completely leave it up to the wisdom of the person holding the deck. You know, whatever your guidance says, do that. There is no wrong way to use this, because that's, you know, part of my prayer when I sat down to write every message and paint every image was, let me be a channel, let me be a pass through, you know, praying over these cards so that when they, whoever's hands they ended up in, they brought, you know, the activation, right? The highest possible message, encouragement, validation, clarity for that person. And so I trust that person's process.
Okay. Now, also, as we mentioned earlier, the deck can be used for divination. And each card, as it's written up in the book, includes some kind of activity or ceremony or incantation. Please describe that for us.
Yeah. Like I said, I have a lot of Oracle decks. And so there's certain ones that I use more often, or I really appreciate how they're laid out. And so I have enjoyed Oracle decks I've used that include a message plus something else. And so this plus something else is a way to start to embody the message or to work with it, to bring it into your body, into your sphere. And so, you know, it could be a written exercise. It could be some kind of guided ceremony or ritual. But my favorite part of the whole experience, because like I said, when I sit down day one, I don't always know what's going to happen, are the incantations, which are basically poems that are meant to be spoken aloud in a declarative way. And as I was working with an early message, this poem just started coming through. And honest to God, I would read it and just cry going, oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't believe this came through me. And so about half of the Oracle cards have incantations as part of their additional piece to supplement the message.
You know, I love it. It's a great product. And I'm somebody who's very familiar with Oracle Dex, and I really like it. It's such a novel approach, and it's got that extra dimension of the initiatory path. So I wish we had a lot more time to talk about it, because as it says in the book, the deck draws on, quote, ancient wisdom stored in your soul's memory from enlightened times. Wow. It's so true, and it's so beautiful. And thank you so much for being on the show today, Stephanie. I wish we had more time to explore.
Yeah, and I just want to say that all of the artwork is available for sale on my website.
Yeah, the artwork's quite exceptional. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, where they can find out about everything that you're doing, including your book and your books and the deck. And that's bluestartemple.org. All one word, bluestartemple.org. And for those who may have tuned into Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Reverend Stephanie Redfeather, author and creator of Empath Activation Cards. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every other Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific time. And even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, my YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcast. And thanks again to Stephanie Redfeather and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.